Yo, hey, we are back with another episode of Dialogue Heavy, in which yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. Good morning, good evening, good night, wherever you are. Thank you for listening to your boy. So, as you know, guys, we got to be intentional and deliberate with everything we want in this life. And for that, I have to say two things. One, that I'm coming on here to Dialogue Heavy Podcast to express myself and express my art, express my stories with my friends, family, and fans. And then two, also hopefully garner the attention of the people that can also help me set my table and share my stories with the world. So with that said, we are continuing with Hindsight, our story of Beansy, the gentleman who is robbing the people who he felt robbed him by firing from his job with very little notice. In the last couple of chapters, it was chapters 9 and 10, Beansy did his thing and they finally robbed the place. After all this time, got all the plans together, got all the employees together, and they robbed the place. It went pretty smoothly in the beginning. It went pretty damn smoothly. They got in and out of the Waldorf in the 3 minutes and got the $10 million and ran across Central Park and got picked up and left. And everything was pretty pristine. And then they had an exit strategy that was pretty well too. Well, where Lenny, Beansy's twin brother, was killed, actually. They set it up where he can be seen after a certain amount of time with a large amount of cash and stuff, which he set up with the bet, with the New York Knicks bet and stuff. And Dino was going to go find him anyway. And he left some of the big money for Mr. Calhoun's at his place. So when they killed Lenny and got the money that Beansy actually owed Dino, he was able to find some extra cash in there too. So Dino would keep his mouth shut and not, you know, tell the mafia about it. Turns out that was a big no-no. Dino, as you know, was a character in the mafia and was outlandish and loud and had lots of booze and women and stuff like that. And then he wanted to start a trade that the mafia didn't appreciate, and selling drugs and stuff. So he put all those things together with Mr. Calhoun's money being gone and him being quiet about all this money that he had and running a drug ring and stuff like that. And they let Mr. Dino go. So that was chapter 9. And in chapter 10, Mr. Calhoun was the one that figured out everything. He was the one that was the security officer of the Waldorf. And so he was in charge of security anyway. So he was the only one that was allowed to, you know, check out the cameras and everything. And basically, if you rewind everything, you'd be able to see how he can see Bernard Beansy plotting the whole. You know, robbery and everything like that. So that's where we're at, and we're about to get into it and see what else he's got going on, because we hinted at the end of the last chapter that there was other stuff that even Bernard didn't know about, and still in the $10 million that would probably get him in trouble. So we're going to try to lead into it now in chapter 11. So without further ado, I bring to you chapters 11 and 12 of Hindsight. And as you know, everything on this podcast, the Dialogue Heavy Podcast, is written and recited by Michael McMillan. So here we go. Chapter 11. Isn't it crazy the value a simple piece of paper can have? On one side, a plain white sheet of paper is useless, right? It means nothing. But if you take that same paper and add just a couple of letters and numbers to it, all of a sudden that paper can be invaluable, like a check. Well, Mr. Calhoun had a few pieces of paper that were invaluable to him in that satchel, and I'm not talking about the money. It was in the form of a leather-bound notebook, a ledger of all his scams, and it had records of all his overseas money market accounts, his dates, transactions, names of his partners, and names of people who owed him. It was his blueprint on how to rob, and I knew when I saw it, I was fucked. From the first time I looked over the ledger, I can see I wasn't nearly as savvy as Mr. Calhoun back in my scamming days in Tennessee. I definitely wasn't dealing with the same amount of zeros as he was, but we did have some of the same things going on. We both knew how to skim from the most inopportune places, then use it as profitable income. We knew how to hide money in plain sight, and we both knew how to use the right people and companies to weasel our way out of paying the type of taxes and fees normal society deemed as a pain in the ass. We were twins in brilliance, cunning, and bold. In fact, the only difference between us was he stood the test of time while I let personal matters drive me out of that life and into financial obscurity long ago. Now, look, I was hiding just outside in Buffalo, New York, in a rundown motel, freezing my ass off, and even with more than $3.5 or so million to keep me warm, I couldn't have felt like more of a piece of shit. My purpose for living, working at the Waldorf the past 25 years, was over. My brother and best friend was dead because of me, and the few friends I had left in the world I could barely keep in contact with in fear of getting them killed. I felt more broken and alone than I did back when I just lived in Brooklyn. But then, one day when I returned to my motel after eating some wings for the umpteenth time, amongst my belongings I came across Mrs. Gailey's gift box that she gave me on my last day of work and opened it. Inside, there was a check and a letter from Mrs. Gailey that made me the happiest man on the planet, all the while making me feel like the dumbest motherfucker that ever lived. To my dearest Beansy, first of all, thank you so much for everything you've done over the years for me and the many residents of the Waldorf. Words cannot describe how much you mean to me. Fifi and I are so sad to see you go, but we want you to know that you will live in our hearts forever. From the day we moved in, your presence and smile has been a constant reminder that there is still a lot of good in the world. I hate that you are not treated with the respect you deserve while you worked at the Waldorf, and the way in which the board members chose to depart with you and the crew was borderline criminal. But I have a plan that can possibly change the future the board tried to paint on you. I've done some research and pulled together a couple of resources and found a way for you to make an honest go at maintaining the life you already had. I realized that it wouldn't take a ton of money for you to start your own doorman service. You'd of course have to put in some work, but knowing you, that wouldn't be a problem at all. Enclosed in this letter are the capital funds you'll need to do just that. Also the application for you to get your state license, which with your experience, you already qualify for. And because your reputation for being the best at what you do already precedes you, plenty of guests at the Waldorf from the past that live in neighboring high-rises have personally told me that they'd be none the happier to be your first client. So, get to work, old man. It's never too late to start your legacy. Now, you do what you want with this money that's enclosed. But, if I know you like I think I do, you'll be up in no time. Take care, friend. Fifi barks hello. And she signed with a kiss. I was in fucking tears by the time I reached the end of the letter. Miss Gailey laid it all out with a check for $100,000 along with the application of how every penny of that money could be allocated to a brand new business. The uniforms, business website, company vehicle, you name it. There were contacts in there also of residents of the other high-rises that I dealt with over the years and everything. Shit, all I had to do was put my name on the goddamn thing. Jesus fucking Christ. Had I been patient enough, everything was laid out for me. But I had to take things into my own hands like a fucking idiot. I had to screw myself and my coworkers too. Fuck. Fuck. Now what do I do? I stole money from Mr. Calhoun and embarrassed the mafia by tricking them into whacking one of their own. I had invaluable information on both parties, but was that enough to save my life? I didn't know for sure, but I couldn't very well just sit around and wait for them to come and find me. I had to do the unthinkable. I had to go to them. Now, Dino's replacement at A's bar was a goon named Fat Tony, and he was fat. I had seen him around over the years as Dino's protege, but never had any dealings with him myself. I called to A's during usual mob hours and asked to speak to him. you know, I don't talk to dead guys, Fat Tony said when he got on the phone. I don't think you quite understand who you're dealing with, kid, but you will soon enough. The higher-ups got a plan for you. Listen, Tony, I said. No, you listen, Fat Tony said, interrupting me. What your brother felt is going to feel like a fucking cakewalk in comparison to when I get to you. Would you shut the fuck up already? I told Tony. Truth is, you can't do shit without permission from your bosses, and I have information that's more important to them than your fucking life, all right? Oh, you got some balls for somebody that's out there playing hide-and-seek, don't you, tough guy? I do. I said, although I wasn't feeling so tough. What makes you think we don't have somebody watching you as we speak? Because if you did, Tony, I wouldn't be talking. Now pay attention. I want to sit down with your bosses. Oh, they'll give you a sit down, Tony said. They'll give you a sit down, all right. They'll give you a fucking lay down. Just tell them to get together get them gather themselves together with Mr. Moneybags in Manhattan, and I'll pick a location and time, and when I'm ready, I'll call you. Oh, you'll call me? Yeah, I'll call you. Whatever. You fucking nigga. And Fat Tony hung up the phone. And I just about shit myself. I'd made myself known, and now, even worse, I'd made myself close. So as I figured that there was a fleet of black Cadillacs heading for Buffalo, I got out of there as soon as I hung up and made my way to the motherland. Federico's motherland, that is, where I could maybe get a wink of sleep before the big soiree. Federico had already gained about 20 pounds since I last saw him. Mr. Calhoun's money, along with life in Cuba, was treating him well. He'd bought a small farm on the southern peninsula of Cuba and was living like a fat cat. His chicken and cattle ranch provided him and his bride Lola with everything they needed. And if times ever did get rough, they always had Mr. Calhoun's money to dip into. I'd turn into a city boy over the years, so I couldn't appreciate the simplicity of the place at first. But once I acclimated to the fresh air and green pastures, walking barefoot in the soil while the hot sun beamed down on us with ice-cold Cuban beers in our hands, I understood the paradise he spoke about. My mind was finally able to rest. I was eating. Not to mention, I was introduced to a different beautiful woman every night. And I actually saw myself being able to live there. I didn't know if my Spanish would ever kick in at my age, but at that point, I didn't care. I told Federico about my meeting with New York, with New York's finest, and he told me I was crazy for even thinking about going back. The money would definitely outlive me in Cuba if I wasn't batshit crazy, and there was virtually no worry of the mob or Mr. Calhoun reaching me all the way down there. But just when I just about made up my mind and thought I was out, Mr. Calhoun and the Italians pulled me back in. I called for Laurasia a few times, but she hadn't answered since she got her money, and I was concerned until I called her home and her mother told me that she had decided to go on the road with her boyfriend Ty while he was on yet another tour. She was young, I thought. She had a lot of money. She didn't need me anymore, but something in my gut just kept making me feel like something wasn't right. I begged her to spend at least a year abroad with her boyfriend and see the world while things cooled down in New York, but she would never hear it a sort. Uh-uh, I ain't leaving my family, Laurasia said. Please, Laurasia, I would tell her. These guys are not the typical gangsters from Brooklyn Avenue robbing people for pennies. No, Bernard. After days of not hearing from her, I was shitting bricks. Even in Cuba, far away from those pasta-eating pieces of shit, I couldn't sleep. Then Laurasia finally called, and when I heard her voice, my heart felt a sense of relief. Bernard. Laurasia, where are you? Hey, Beansy! A man's voice said, and my heart wrenched. Oh, don't worry about your little nigglet here. We ain't gonna hurt her. Not yet, anyway. Motherfucker! I told Fat Tony. No thanks, she's a little dark for my liking, but you can come pick her up anytime you want. All right, I'm coming. Oh, I know you are, Fat Tony said. We figure you fled the country with that little spick of yours, so make sure you bring him too. Fuck you, Tony. Fuck me? Yeah, fuck you. Hey, Polly, Tony said. Bring the other one out so she can talk to him. Other one, I thought. Mrs. Gailey? I got a surprise for you, Beansy, that I know you'll like. My heart skipped a beat. My heart sank when I heard the voice. My blood pressure skyrocketed and I damn near passed out. Uncle Bernie! Fuck! I thought. They got Zaniah too? Chapter 12. Needless to say, I needed to be on the next flight to New York, but it wouldn't be easy. I was going to have to try to convince Federico to come with me. His life was great. He had more money than he could ever have dreamed of, and he had Lola. He wasn't going to leave his paradise without a fight. Fuck you, man. I ain't never going back. Federico, we have to. ¿Por qué, estúpido? Well, we owe it to Laurasia, one. And two, he has my family. No, man. Everybody for themselves. Oh, really, Fred? Like that? Federico just shook his head. That's pretty damn selfish, man, I told Federico. If it wasn't for Laurasia, you wouldn't even have that fucking mountain of cash you're sitting on, remember? You think I don't know that? Then? Even if I won't go, my wife say no. I looked at Federico in his eyes after a moment. Okay, I said. But think about this, man. If they already went to Tennessee to find my niece, what makes you think that they don't already have little Freddy and the other kids at gunpoint? He don't say that. It doesn't matter, Federico. No, fuck that. I stay. No, selfish prick. Fuck you. No, fuck you. Hey. Lolio, ¿qué pasó? Both Federico and I were staring at each other like we were going to rip each other's heads off. I didn't know just how much Maria heard of or how much she understood of our conversation. But before Federico could say anything else, I grabbed my bags and I took off. I was a fucking mess on the way home for Federico's. It's already pretty complicated to get in and out of Cuba into the United States, but when you add the turmoil I was about to get myself into and the potential of a very, very painful death at the end of it, my mind was spinning. I was worried about LaRaysha, I was terrified for Zenaya, and selfishly, I wondered if I was, as Fat Tony said, a dead man walking. The second my flight landed at JFK Airport, my head was on a swivel. Everybody I saw looked like Dino or one of his goons, and I was scared. My first thought was to go check on the money where I had stashed it, but I didn't in case somebody was watching me, and I settled in at the Grand Hotel. One of the most expensive hotels in the world, prized for their diamond-level service, amenities, and more importantly, their high level of security. I kept to myself locked up in my room with the Do Not Disturb placard strategically placed at my door and felt a bit more safe, but I was hungry. I basically hadn't eaten since the LaRaysha call. More couldn't eat. But with the Grand Hotel having some of the best chefs in the country at my disposal, I ordered damn near everything they had. Lobster tail, filet mignon, rice pilaf, and asparagus, and a little mullet to wash it down. While I waited for the feast, I took a long hot shower and tried not to think about the craziness I'd put myself in. After I lotioned and laid on the king-size bed in anticipation for my feast, while watching some late night television. When my food finally arrived, I was cautious and I told the hotel employee to leave it at the door after sliding a $5 bill under the door. And when I thought the coast was clear, I pulled in my tray and locked the door in seconds. I'm not even sure if I chewed, I was so hungry. The asparagus tasted a little off, but even that couldn't stop me. Within 10 minutes, I went from starving to a cow filled with meat and champagne, and not too long after that is when I started to feel quite a bit sick. I tried to stand, but my body felt like it weighed 1,000 pounds. I laid back down, then all of a sudden the television started to move from left to right, shifting. I couldn't understand it. I managed to get on my feet and stand, but when I did, I had the spins like when I drank too much in the past. I got to the table and braced myself on it, trying to see what the fuck did I do wrong. The Moet bottle was barely half empty, and all the food was gone except for that shitty asparagus with the shimmering red crystals on it. I just as well thought it was salt earlier, but when I looked at it a little bit closer, the granules were too big. I put some granules in between my fingers and they smushed into powder. The fuck was that? I said, as my body stopped responding and I dropped like a sack of nickels onto the floor. Now I was flat on my stomach, gasping for air, and the last thing I saw was three sets of footsteps walking towards me and a voice that said, "Put the nigga in the car." And boom, bam, 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 bam. What do you think about that, guys? Horrible recording, I believe, today. But I'm, you know, managing to get myself back into the mode. That's the reason why you don't stop doing these things, because your momentum doesn't go as well. But we got through it. I ain't gonna beat myself up too bad. We got through it, all right? So, yeah. Beansy is in a world of hurt. It seems like he's about to be in a world of hurt anyway. Looks as though the Mafia realized that he had already gotten back or was watching him just like how he thought they were. And so we're just going to have to see what happens next. I'm going to get out of here because I'm embarrassing myself with the way that I'm talking and the way that I'm recording this. But I hope you liked it. I hope you loved it. And if you didn't, I hope you at least heard it and learned something from it. So that's yet another couple chapters of Hindsight. And I'll have a couple more for you next week. And we're going to get this story on the road and get it ending so we can move on to something new. Okay, so thank you again for listening. I really appreciate you. And I'll talk to you soon. You know how you can get a hold of me at Michael DeGrio on my Instagram and my email, mzzack199@gmail.com. That's mzzack199@gmail.com. Thank you very much. Talk to you guys later. Peace. I'm out of here.